Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, and I am a proud member of the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. We'll explain what this organization is. And one of the reasons why I am a proud member is the IAABC stands up for humane training methods. And on the phone right now, Dot Baisley, the executive director, and there's been this whole hoopla, I don't know what you call it, in the animal training world, because I understand that anyone can say, I'm a dog trainer, and or I guess a behavior consultant without certification. So friends ask for that certification. But in addition to that, though, Dot, I think it goes beyond that, because I think there need to be agreed upon standards that are best practices. And in fact, all these other organizations, the dog training organizations like the Victoria Stillwell Dog Training, Karen Pryor Academy, International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, you guys, Gene Donaldson Academy for Dog Trainers, the Pet Professional Guild, Association for Professional Dog Training International, and others have said, yes, those are all the big ones, have said, yes, yeah, we need that. And the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers, if you're following this whole story, said, we'll put it all together. But then they said, it's okay to use shock collars, to use prong collars, which are those, they look like a cartoon dog with the pointy things around the dog's neck, or the so-called choke collars, which are the chain link collars. And to me, Dot, that moves the clock back in time rather than forward in time. And IAABC, you, as well as all these other organizations I rattled off, have all pulled out of this agreement saying, no, we don't want any part of this equipment. So I think, first of all, we can explain what the IAABC is and why you guys said, as long as you're supporting and promoting shock collars and this other equipment, we don't want any part of it.
Well, I think you've touched on a lot of points in a very short period of time. Number one, we live and work in an unregulated industry. What does that mean? It means that anybody can hang up a shingle and say, I can help you with your dog's training and behavior needs, or your cat, horse, parrot, pet needs, companion animal needs. What the IAABC stands for is humane, ethical, science-based approach to all of your animal, companion animal needs, right? So we are a membership organization and a certifying body. We are one of the very few third-party certifications, which means that we do not provide the education. We merely take the assessment of your skills and knowledge and say, you have demonstrated, or not, if you don't pass one of our certifications, that you don't have the skills and knowledge necessary to apply the knowledge of behavior change within a companion animal. Now, we also stand behind the fact that the only effective and humane way to do behavior change is without the use of aversive tools or techniques. Why? Because it supports the animal's welfare, the animal's well-being, and the human-animal bond.
All right.
And I'll stop there so you can ask me more questions.
No, that's perfect. So when it was suggested that, yes, there needs to be some agreement from all these organizations as so not anyone can say, I'm a, and we'll stick to dogs for the moment, I'm a dog trainer. That's a good thing. But what they decided is it's okay to use all of those things like shock collars that I mentioned, and all these other organizations, including you guys, said, no, that's anything but okay. Why do you say it's anything but okay?
Because we are focused on what the science tells us. And the science tells us that in order to support an animal holistically, you have to approach behavior change either through training or behavior modification. That's a whole other topic, the difference between those two, right?
Yeah.
To support an animal through those things and an owner and a human, the most effective way to support the animal holistically is to not use aversive tools and techniques, right? And again, we as an organization don't list out tools and techniques. We don't sit there and say this or that or no or that, yes, because particularly for us, where we certify people in dog, cat, horse, parrot, and shelter specialties, that would be a very extensive list.
Of course.
And it's ever-changing. The imagination of humans to come up with tools and techniques that can cause fear, pain, and intimidation in an animal is endless. So we merely state that effective behavior change is possible through positive reinforcement and other tools and techniques that do not rely on the intentional use of aversives.
And intentional use of punishment, really based equipment. So, which is what aversive, to my understanding, means. So, why not?
Yes, but that also encompasses punishing or punishment techniques or techniques that include flooding, right?
Yeah.
So, if the intentional use of fear, intimidation, and pain would say that you have an animal who's afraid of something and you can put them in a situation in which they're over threshold, exposed to that trigger. That doesn't include a tool. That doesn't include, you know, a shock collar or a pinch collar or any of those other tools that we were discussing. It includes a technique in which causes emotional distress on the animal.
Yeah, you are. I think that's such a good point because there are other things. So let's explain what flooding is. So in other words,
exactly.
If we're in Chicago here, Dot. Mm-hmm. So if your dog is afraid of the loud noise of the train, instead of appropriate behavior modification, which would mm-hmm. work, what could work, I suppose, but is absolutely inhumane, is like holding the dog down right at the train, right there. So the dog is being flooded with the sound mm-hmm. and the sight of that train, which the dog is fearful of. And it's inhumane to do that. It would be like taking you, if you're afraid of snakes, and putting you in a room with 500,000 zillion snakes. And that's
exactly,
yeah, that's flooding. And it's not exactly any more humane in dogs than it is people.
Or effective.
Right. Right.
Right. Because what do you learn when you can't escape the snakes or can't escape the train? You have four choices in response: fight, flight, fidget, or freeze. What we see very often is the freeze. It's the give up. It's the learned helplessness, which has long-term traumatic implications for that learner, that animal, be it a human, be it a cat, be it a dog, be it whatever. That learner is going to know they do not have control over their environment. They do not have choice in their interactions, and they can't trust their darned human to get them out of a situation that causes that amount of distress for them.
All well said, and we'll talk more when we come back with Dot Baisley of the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants on WGN. Dot Baisley is the executive director of the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. And there's nothing wrong with certified dog trainers. They are wonderful. They are necessary. They are important. Yeah. All these wonderful, yeah. wonderful. But to me, there is a distinction there between what your ordinary, I hate that word, dog trainer does compared to a behavior consultant. The training is just different.
Well, that's the difference between training and behavior modification, right? So when I am training, I am teaching a new behavior. This is still technically behavior change. I'm teaching an animal to do something in response to an environmental cue that they did not know how to do before. But they also have no negative emotional response to that environmental stimuli. So I say sit, I look at a dog, they don't, an 8-week-old puppy, don't have any concept of what sit means to me. I teach them, I say that SIT, you put your butt on pavement, you get a reinforcer, everybody's happy, yay, we've trained a new cue. That is different than a dog who already has, or cat, or any other species, a negative emotional response to an environmental trigger. So we'll go back to the example of snakes, right? I have a negative emotional response to snakes. Training me to go up and touch a snake would be far more complicated than teaching somebody who has no emotional baggage around snakes. They're like, oh, that's the thing over there. It just slithers on the ground. Let me go investigate. That is a whole different set of skills, far more complicated to teach somebody who has an emotional response to something to change that emotional response. So there's a difference between training and behavior modification. Training is teaching new skills. Behavior modification is changing an emotional response.
All very true. And what I was also trying to get at is that not all dog trainers want to or are equipped to deal with separation anxiety in dogs, thunderstorm anxiety in dogs, aggression in dogs. I mean, the list goes, a dog that's just jumping at the door too often. The list goes on and on and on and on, where members of your organization are oftentimes dog trainers, but not always, but always are certified in dealing with behavioral issues. Is that a good way to explain?
Well, we have multiple levels of certifications. So we have the accredited dog trainer certification, which is a certification that does demonstrate a high level of knowledge and skill in husbandry and behavior change, right? But then we also have the behavior consultant certification, which are those folks who have demonstrated a higher level of skill and knowledge in modifying those emotional responses.
Right, and dealing with the kinds of behavior problems that I rattled off and many more. The thing is, though, that our pet birds, such as pet parrots, are cats. They rarely go, I don't know, they're actually, in my world, there should be kitten classes, and in some places there are. There aren't any that I know of, pet parrot classes. Horses have behavior issues potentially just as dogs and cats do. So you also...
Any living being can have,
I suppose, yes.
Right?
But you don't offer... I don't think you offer certification in armadillo behavior issues, but you do in when it comes to horses, and you do when it comes to cats and parrots as well.
Yes.
And there aren't...
And shelters professionals as well.
Yes. And for all of those, there aren't a lot of other options out there. You know, so when you came along... And I was there when you came along, literally. I was there. And when you came along, because everyone was saying, due to this guy on TV, that I'm a behaviorist. I'm, you know, or some term like that, without any training, without any background, or sometimes even worse, giving misinformation and disinformation to people. You said, no. This organization said, anyway, we're going to do this right. So if you're having a behavior issue with a dog or a cat or a horse or a parrot, one can go to your website and find help, I believe.
Yes, we have a consultant locator on our website, iabc.org, where anybody can go and search in their area to find a local behavior trainer consultant certified by us. And again, those folks have demonstrated a high level of skill and knowledge in science-based, positive reinforcement-focused behavior change.
And the thing is that this is a profession where, like a lot of professions, I suppose, that it's always changing. It's always evolving. I suspect it has even in the past X number of years since you've been executive director.
I've only been in the position for a little over 2 years now. But yes, you are correct. It is an ever-evolving field. And the knowledge that we have 2 years ago, 20 years ago when this organization started, is far more advanced, and I anticipate in another 5-10 years, it will be even further down that that road as more and more scientists actually look at canine cognition and learning and all of these things, and there's more research coming out, and there's more publications, and there's more education available to us to understand these other species and how they perceive the world, how they interact with the world, and how they learn from us, right? So it is never ending, and that is one of the reasons why we require all of our certificates to, in order to maintain their certifications, they have to continue their education. You have a 3-year period, you have to show that you have done 36 units of continuing education within those 3 years so that you stay abreast of the knowledge and you see how the industry is changing and what's coming forward and how do you do your best to support the well-being of animals and the people who care for them.
And our dogs and cats and other pets as well are family members. So before you knee-jerk response, if you will, as you're looking on the internet to get help or just to look for a dog trainer, it's incredibly important for reasons you just described to look for that certification. Dot Baisley, right. Thank you for everything that you do. To learn more, it's IAABC, International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, IAABC.org. Indiana, Pennsylvania, known for the birthplace of Jimmy Stewart, the actor, and now for one other thing. At a nursing home in Indiana, Pennsylvania, they heard a loud banging at the window and the glass broke. The nurses run in that direction and they find a black bear. And the black bear is rummaging through all this stuff, looking no doubt for food. You know, you don't want to fool around with nurses defending their patients, even if you're a bear. So the nurses took a walker and then another walker and pushed the bear into a corner. Then a nurse had this bright idea. She thought, Rice Krispie treats. And she lured the bear right out of the nursing home. This happened late at night. Not a single resident at that time was even aware that a bear broke in. Those nurses, very cool. Dr. Kelly Fishman is a veterinarian certified in rehabilitation medicine, as well as acupuncture, which we'll talk about a bit. But I received this pitch like none other that I've ever gotten over all of these many, many years that I've been doing this radio show. And that is an issue with a midlife crisis in dogs and cats. I don't know if that means they go out and get a Corvette. I don't know what that means. We will find out. I do know that there is a point in time with puppies and kittens where they're kind of like teenagers. We've identified that. We do know about senior pets, depending on the breed when we're talking dog and the size of the dog. Cats, certainly. And then another completely different category, geriatric pets, when we begin to see cachexia, which is muscle wasting and many other things, some of which we'll talk about. But a midlife crisis for dogs and cats? Oh, no. What does that mean, Dr. Fishman?
Well, yes, hide your credit cards because they may buy a Porsche.
That's what I'm saying.
I know. So, Steve, you kind of hit on it. We know all about puppies and teenagers, what defines a senior and a geriatric, you know, in veterinary medicine. And we were thinking, you know, what about thinking instead about this midlife time period before they become a senior, before they become geriatric, and you're left with a frail, muscle-wasted dog or cat who's painful with arthritis, which is typically when I see them as a rehab vet. You know, they're kind of can't get upstairs, they can't jump anymore, they, you know, have a terrible time on their walk, their behavior has changed. I know you have a behavior background, so you're not sure if they're painful or are they having behavior changes. So what is this midlife period, so the human equivalent of a 50-year-old? Can we look at our dogs and cats and say, we know that they're about to enter their golden years. Do we have an opportunity to make those years the very best by starting to just prepare a little bit? And that's kind of where we thought, like, what's a midlife crisis? And, you know, we humans get it, and so do our animals.
Okay, so at one point, does that happen for your average dog or cat? And how are they likely to express this midlife crisis? And one more thing, as I'm asking 12 questions at once, and that other is this really not about a midlife crisis? It's a clever way to say it, but the real point is to be proactive, to get ahead of problems before they become problems. I'm sorry I asked so much at once.
No, certainly. So the age, so about 50 years old, in a dog or a cat, we of course have to break it up by breed, because we all know that they're, you know, a Chihuahua is aging at a different rate than a Great Dane. So dogs that are under 50 pounds are French Bulldogs, are little terrier mixes. They hit their midlife around 10 years old. And then our bigger dogs, over 50 pounds, Labradors, Great Danes, Doodle mixes, the bigger Doodle mixes, they're hitting their midlife around 7. And our kitties, because I'm a cat person, you know, they hit their midlife crisis around 7 as well. So that's about the age, 7 years old and bigger dogs and kitties, and 10 in our smaller dogs. And what do you see? You see less playful, less stamina on walks, and stamina meaning the enthusiasm and the strength to go on long walks and do the things that they love to do. You know, sometimes they may be sleeping more or gaining weight. Things like that are kind of happening midlife, just as their body's kind of preparing for being a senior and doing things like, you know, you already mentioned it, starting to lose muscle. Their digestion showing slowing down and changing, their metabolism slowing down, the chronic diseases that we see orthopedically, like arthritis, are starting to pop up as, you know, kind of pain signs. So all those kinds of things are happening to our midlife dogs and our midlife cats, who have arthritis just as much as our dogs do.
All right, so the other thing I asked, and maybe you're about to go there, is this as much about being proactive as anything else? And because, for example, you mentioned arthritis. I mean, even dogs, and most certainly cats, are not going to tell you they're hurting. So is the idea to get ahead of some of these things before they become a problem?
Yes, 100%. Correct. It's all about prevention, starting before they get really old and creaky, broken down joints, when you still maybe have a little bit of cartilage left and, you know, you still have that muscle. Should we be starting a little bit earlier in these dogs with arthritis, not just on joint supplements, because everybody knows to do joint supplements, right? They're kind of, there's some evidence for, you know, fish-based omega-3 fatty acids, and maybe some other prescription joints supplements. But what about muscle? The muscle is just as important. So I'm in supporting the joints, and I certainly think about that as a rehabilitation vet. So again, thinking from a preventative lens, what can I do for my midlife dog who I know maybe had hip dysplasia, which leads to arthritis later in life, or our cats, who a great majority of them get arthritis, and just like you said, they don't really show it. So maybe starting a little bit early, preventing, you know, muscle breakdown, preventing joint breakdown, is a great thing to do with supplements, and also keeping your dog or cat
you know, in a nice, healthy weight. And yeah, we can't fix arthritis. It's something we can't cure. So we have to prevent it.
Yeah, if you possibly can. So let's stick with arthritis at the moment, since that's what we're bringing up. And it's a common thing. So I don't know that people realize, let's talk about this first, exactly how common arthritis is. So the good news is our dogs and cats are living in general longer than ever before. The bad news is they are suffering diseases of geriatrics more than ever before. And we have more overweight dogs and cats and obese than ever before. The combination of all those things and genetics that we still don't understand, arthritis is far more common in dogs and especially cats. People thought they're small.
Yeah.
There's no arthritis here. Turns out there may be more arthritis in cats than dogs. So can you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, so kitties are great hiders of pain. You know, they don't like to show that they're painful or sore. And I certainly have missed it in my own animals. But it was some astonishing figure or studies that came out on cats with arthritis basically showing that if you're more of a senior kitty, so closer to 10, not necessarily in midlife, but more of a senior cat, 90% of those are going to have arthritis on an x-ray or on an exam. And the owner, and maybe thought there was something wrong, but the veterinarian, when they went to their regular, you know, senior wellness exams, did not pick up on it. So the cats are hiding their pain. We know it's there. And, yeah, it's a big, big issue, and it's certainly something that us veterinarians are trying to spread the awareness about because it had been so missed.
All right. So we'll talk more about midlife crisis. And I want to continue with arthritis since that's what we began with. And if you have a cat that's a senior cat, odds are statistically that cat has what we call osteoarthritis. And the same is true for senior dogs. So we'll talk about all of that when we come back with Dr. Kelly Fishman on WGN. She says hide your credit cards because your dog may go out and buy a Porsche. Or your cat, what would a cat buy? Maybe a catnip farm. I don't really know. But I do know that now we've identified, apparently, a midlife potential crisis in dogs and cats. And I think this is just a clever way of saying get ahead of things before they begin to happen inevitably if you don't get ahead of it in our senior and geriatric pets. And have I got that, first of all, correct, Dr. Fishman?
Yes, that's right.
All right. So Dr. Fishman is certified in rehabilitation and acupuncture. We were talking, in fact, about arthritis. So are there ways you can get ahead of arthritis? And what I'm thinking first, I think I'm thinking about two things. I'm thinking about weight and I'm thinking about nutritional supplements. So can you expand on both those topics?
Yeah. So certainly weight is one of the biggest factors in progressing arthritis. So keeping your dog thin or your cat thin is hugely beneficial for the joints. Not only the joints, but also their longevity. So we certainly know that dogs who are kept thin live longer just because they have less other secondary diseases. So being thin is a great thing. The other thing is the supplements. And again, or like I said before, I love to think of supplements for dogs with arthritis in two different categories. The evidence that there is for joint supplements, so that's for protecting the cartilage or the joint fluid and keeping that gears of the joint, so as I like to call it, nice and lubricated and healthy. But then when I think as a rehab vet, I really think about muscle because we have to have strong muscle to support the joint dynamically. So that's where I think of things like there's a supplement called fortitropin, which is in an ingredient in something called MyosPet. And it's been proven in senior dogs with weakness, lameness, muscle loss associated with arthritis. They did a study of 46 of these dogs. And what happened is after feeding this supplement, this fortitropin, for about 12 weeks, the animals actually had improved mobility just from the improvement in muscle. And that's huge. So we know that even with ourselves, if you have an injury, you start to lose muscle around with your knee joint. You go to physical therapy to build up that muscle. And it's so important to do it from a nutritional point of view. And then as a rehab therapist, I come in and I find ways to build muscle with exercise or aquatic therapy like underwater treadmill or swimming and doing things to build muscle, not even from a nutritional point of view, but from like an actual, you know, mechanical build muscles through exercise point of view.
Myos, by the way, is M-Y-O-S, I believe. Now, let me ask you this question. As dogs or cats age, they want to move around less. And cats aren't exactly, let's go out and run a marathon pet anyway. So how important is that expression, motion is lotion?
That's so funny. I just heard that, and I love it. Use it or lose it, motion is lotion. So, yes, keep moving. We have found in dogs with arthritis, if you stop moving them, there is a vicious cycle of worsened arthritis, probably because of that muscle loss. So we know in dogs that it's tremendously helpful to keep them moving. And then some of the other things I think about for exercise with my midlife pets, doggy dementia. We certainly know that, like, when our senior dogs and geriatric dogs and kitties get this, that exercise can be really beneficial with that. You know, it's also great for the immune system, and animals are less frail when they keep moving. So it's certainly an important thing to do, not just for arthritis, but lots of other things that our midlife and senior dogs and cats have.
You know, I just had to write about this for a publication, actually, this very same thing. And my expression here was use it or lose it, that great-great-grandpa said, and he was right about that, because the brain needs exercise too. And when that doesn't happen, I mean, we figure, okay, the dog knows how to sit, stay, roll over already, and we also figure sometimes cat doesn't need to know anything. So we never challenge them intellectually. So I'm a huge fan of food puzzles and all of these other snuffle mats and all of these other things that we can do now to keep their brain lubricated as well. Apparently you're agreeing with that. And there are some supplements out there for that as well.
Yeah. And it certainly felt like that when you hit on with the brain lubricated. Say, for example, I come in and I start to work with a senior dog. They've been, you know, they had a lot of fun activity when they were a puppy. Maybe they did a little bit of, you know, agility or nose work as a younger dog. And then as they're getting midlife or older, they're slowing down, arthritis is starting to set in, and all they're doing is the same boring walk every day. So I come in, and one of the first things I do, I said, I kind of help with exercises, and I show ways to actually, basically, old dog learning new tricks. How do I do a dog push-up? How do I do a dog core exercise? And they're working with their favorite person, a member of their family. So it's so beneficial from a behavioral point of view, a learning point of view. And just like the dogs are just so happy to have a new and different way to engage with their favorite people. And it's so healthy and wonderful for them on many levels.
Absolutely true. I agree with you completely. So this whole midlife thing is really about prevention, the way I'm understanding, and also being proactive to prevent issues later in life. Can that really be done? Does genetics overpower everything? Do we have some control here? And I don't know. Anecdotally, at least, what do you think?
Yes, we absolutely have some control. You know, we know in people that's true too. So I think that it's one of those things where I've even seen older dogs, like I said, who are frail, weak, have a multitude of, you know, issues that have gone on in their bodies. They can even get better. And, you know, with physical rehabilitation, acupuncture, good nutrition, good science, you know, backed supplements, they can improve. So, you know, certainly, I've seen it reverse. Even dogs that they didn't even start. They started a little bit too late. Like the owners say to me, I wish I had started, you know,
right,
in midlife.
Yeah. I understand. So we have 1 minute here. How do you know the supplement is right? Because there are so many choices out there. It's like the Wild West.
Oh man, it is the Wild West. Here's what I say. Try to find something that has scientific evidence and try to find a company or a manufacturer that has proven that it works in dogs and cats. So that's the number one thing that I look for. So for example, like the Fortitropin and the Myos Pet, we have evidence in dogs, two studies in dogs and in cats. And they're starting to do some evidence and work in horses as well.
Hmm.
So we have evidence in dogs and cats that it works to do what it says it does. You know, so that's what I like. It's the same thing with probiotics. Make sure you're using a probiotic that is a made for dogs or a cat and has evidence behind them. We have them. Same thing with joint supplements. Make sure you're using something like an omega-3 fatty acid fish oil that is beneficial for the joints. Also, you know, certain types of collagen, like a type 2 undenatured collagen, could be really great as well. So we have evidence for things. So you just have to make sure you have to be smart. And I would say do smart supplements and make sure that you're not wasting your money on things that don't work. And just look on companies' websites and you could usually find out that information.
And or ask your veterinarian, right?
And ask your veterinarian.
All right, perfect. Dr. Kelly Fishman, a pleasure to meet you, a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much, and I'm going to run out right now and lubricate myself. I don't even know what that means. Thank you, Dr. Fishman.
All right, Steve, have a great day.
Are moose a problem for you? Well, maybe not if you're living in the Chicago. I don't know of any moose that live anywhere near Chicago, of course. But here's a problem in Colorado and Maine. People are walking their dogs off leash, and the moose consider these dogs off leash to be a threat. And they're attacking the dog. The people go to help their dog. And now the 7-foot-high, 1,500-pound moose attacks them. This has happened now several different times. And you know what? Moose, once they decide to charge you, you're not going to be at the winning end of that. You know, dogs should be on a leash. Unless it's at a place where a dog park, for example, where the dog should be off leash. But otherwise, it's to protect the dog, and it's the right thing to do. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.